Hey everybody, Dr. Josh Ellen here again for the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Again, we have commandeered the ship of the Sports Medicine Broadcast from Jeremy Jackson, and we will be taking control for the rest of the day. With me today, or with me in this segment, is Dr. Azude, right? I'm saying that the right way?
Correct.
And Dr. Azude, George Azude. Let's just briefly catch everybody up to speed. Give us a little bit of a background on you.
Sure.
You know, where'd you go to school?
Sure.
Where'd you do your training? And
sure.
What do you specialize in?
Sure. Absolutely. I'm actually from Houston. I was born in Herman Hospital, back when it was called Herman Hospital. Moved to New York when I was about four with my family. Did school, undergrad there at St. John's. Went to medical school and residency in Chicago, University of Illinois.
All right.
So I was there for about a decade. Decided it was too cold. Came down here to Houston for a fellowship. Worked with the Baylor and majority the UT staff. Worked with all the pro teams and UH and St. Thomas High School. And saw that this was the place I wanted to be to continue doing sports medicine. So
and so your training is in, you are primary care sports medicine, or you are orthopedic surgery?
I am orthopedic surgery, so orthopedic surgery, sports medicine. It's about 50% of my practice right now.
Outstanding.
So we take care of five high schools in the northeast area.
So great.
Very, very fun part of the job.
So. And so your talk today was about assessment of anterior knee pain.
Correct, yes.
And so we talk about anterior knee pain. What are we really talking about?
Oh, yeah. It's such a wide range of different actual diagnoses that make up the whole entity of anterior knee pain. So, and it's very common. So it's just a very important aspect of athletes' careers. It's going to affect the majority of athletes.
And so when we really talk about anterior knee pain, obviously the hot topic out there is, you know, ACL, meniscus,
sure.
But people forget about the sesamoid bone called the patella.
Correct.
They forget about the patellar tendon. If you're really a true anatomist, you make a distinction between the patellar tendon and the patellar ligament.
Correct.
We look at how the knee moves and you know, how all that other stuff works. So let's really talk about anterior knee pain.
Sure.
So what are, you know, for all the people that are listening, what are some things that they need to know when you're assessing a patient? What are you looking for?
Well, first of all, I think you're right in kind of explaining how the perception is, you know, kind of see the acute injuries of meniscal tears and ACLs, but anterior knee pain can be just as debilitating and really keep athletes out of sports or performing at a level that's suboptimal to them. So I think it deserves a lot of attention. I think it has gotten a lot of attention because it's been so enigmatic, both the diagnosis and the treatment. You know, back 40, 50 years ago, the surgeries that were done on anterior knee pain were really surgeries that didn't help patients, sometimes made them worse. We're getting better. We're understanding more. We still have more to learn. I think a very interesting thing in more recent literature is how structures away from the knee, the immediate area of the knee, affect the knee. Posture, core strength, hip function, all of that positions the knee to be in a efficient position to absorb load. And once we get a good understanding of that, I think we can even make more headway.
And so we really kind of go back to what some of the topics were yesterday. We're really talking about holistic body movement.
Correct.
We're really talking about core strength. We're really talking about how the skeleton moves as one whole. We don't move segmentally.
Right.
We move as one whole. So start to categorize some of the injuries that we're talking about in terms of anterior knee pain.
Because
I think when people think about it, they think about, you know, again, the patellar tendon. But what are the categories?
There's so much more. So we think about, we kind of categorize them into different anatomic structures. So there's bone. The bone of the anterior knee can either be the kneecap, the patella, the end of the femur bone, the trochlea, the very top of the shin bone, the tibia. Then we think about cartilage. There's the patellofemoral articular cartilage. There's cartilage in the meniscus that can be injured. And then the soft tissue, which is really should be the focus point, because in my talk, I indicated that a lot of the pain sensation, what actually is hurting patients, is actually nerve fibers, pain sensory fibers within the soft tissue, things like the medial and lateral retinaculum, the patellar tendon, the anterior fat pad, or the synovial plica. Those are very exquisite painful areas that can limit a lot of patients. Several other conditions can also lead to anterior knee pain. So referred pain from the back or the hip, still anterior knee pain, you know, because it refers all to the front of the knee, and that's what patients will come in complaining about. And they can be a head scratcher when you examine those patients and they have really underwhelming knee exams. Mm-hmm. Then you got to start thinking hip, back, something else, you know.
So everything is being referred back to this, you know, it's going up and down this kinetic chain.
Correct.
So when you're examining a knee, and, you know, we're really talking to the people that are listening, and so when you're examining the knee, what are some things, walk us through your kind of algorithm that you use when a patient walks in and says, hey, Dr. Zude, my knee is killing me. What's wrong?
So, yeah, I think at that point, you just got to settle in because you really need to be thorough. You need to start at the level of the history. Start peeling away at the onion, asking questions about timing, onset, duration, location, understanding the anatomy, where certain structures are likely to hurt, understanding the nature of the patient's sport, their activity level, their goals, their you know, how far they want to take sports that can indicate how intense they participate. Asking questions about their surgical history, very important. Lots of reasons why post-surgical patients can present with anterior knee pain. Starting to think about the other areas away from the knee, ask about their back and their hip. Looking at risk factors, taking the patient and looking at what risk factors they may have for certain conditions, like certain sports or certain body types or certain ages. And female gender, as I noted in my talk, is a very high risk compared to males.
Is that because of the Q angle?
I think it kind of goes back to imbalance. I think that's the overall arching thing, muscular imbalance or structural alignment. So there has to be something that's conferred with being a female in association with some kind of imbalance that leads to abnormal loads and therefore leads to a pain. There's other, you know, theories as well. There could be a hormonal difference too. So you try to look for reasons that can explain their symptoms. So,
you know, there's some great work happening at the University of Southern California, and they were really looking at the forces that are happening at, especially on the medial side of the knee. And for a long time in rehab, or even the prevention of injury, you know, we gave a lot of focus to that vastus medialis and the oblique portion of that vastus medialis. And we looked at, you know, kneecap or patellar tract, and we looked at all these things. And ultimately, through some, you know, constant evaluation of metrics and outcomes and stuff like that, we started to see, you know, it's maybe more associated with that gluteus medius than it is more on that VMO, which I remember I was in school, and I remember the shift happening, that all of a sudden we kind of went to a conference, and it was VMO, 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 oh, stop,
wait,
gluteus medius,
right.
And then out came, you know, things like the functional movement screen, and then came, you know, holistic exams, and then came that kinetic chain. And as my biomechanics professor said in undergraduate, Dr. Bill Whiting, he wrote a book with Zernica, two incredible biomechanists, about, you know, Dizzy Dean syndrome and this kinetic chain transfer, and, you know, how if we have an issue in the big toe, it can transfer up to the, you know, upper cervicals. And
sure.
So when you're examining a patient, obviously we talked about history, huge component. Your understanding of anatomy, even a bigger component. Your understanding of where certain things can light up and where they can't light up. So now let's kind of move into a special test. Do you go through a specific routine in how you examine? So walk us through that.
Absolutely. So after kind of eliciting that history, I start my physical exam by observing. So I like to observe the patients while they walk, because that's just the natural progression. They're usually sitting in a chair, usually have them stand up to get to over to the bed anyway. So I have them walk. I watch how they get up from the chair, what other muscles they may recruit, if they grimace, if they have pain. I observe any abnormalities in gait, look for any alignment abnormalities, any signs of weakness. Mm-hmm. I look what happens to their lower extremities once they become weight-bearing, to look for any dynamic changes. Sometimes the navicular bone can pronate and can fall. Mm-hmm. And again, foot conditions has been, theorized to link to anterior knee pain. Look for any recurvatum in their knee. Mm-hmm. with the gait cycle in the stance phase. And once I'm satisfied with that, I kind of look at things like the core strength. I think evaluating core strength in a standing position is very useful. And I do a bunch of tests. I literally have my patients exercising in clinic.
So a lot of what you're doing is a lot of what we're doing as athletic trainers in our evaluation process.
Absolutely. I think it's very important. And I think it's really important to say that and talk about it, because, sometimes we feel as practitioners that we may not have the time, and we'll rush through some of these exams. You need to settle in and just mm-hmm. and just take your time with it. So I'll have patients do a single leg squat, double leg squat. I'll have them do just single leg stance, just mm-hmm. to observe how quiet they are with their control of their hip or in their core. I'll have them sit in a chair, scoop forward at the edge, and have them rise with both legs or with one leg, mm-hmm. assisted with an arm, with one arm, two arms, or no arms, just to see what kind of control that they have. Then we transition to the exam on the table, and then we go through several tests. And I like specific tests. I really focus on the medial knee.
Okay.
I feel like in my practice, the medial knee actually has more is more common as far as location for pain. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was training, and even in personally, I remember being told for my knee pain that a lot of times it's due to tight lateral structures.
Uh-huh.
This was back in the time when lateral releases were just the craze.
I remember.
Right?
I was in school, and people were just...
Everyone had a lateral release.
Yeah, I mean, if you had any maltracking, if you had maltracking in the patella, guess what happened?
Lateral release.
You got cut.
So I had a lateral release. I was in my first year of medical school, between first and second year, and I had knee pain. I was an avid basketball player.
And they came in, they cut you.
They cut my knee.
And how did it do for you?
I still have medial knee pain.
Right.
So it's really interesting, to see kind of the transition and see us grow and improve. But yeah, at that time, lateral knee pain was heavily pushed. Mm-hmm. Tightness of the lateral structures versus the weakness of the medial structures. In my practice, I see the majority of anterior medial knee pain. So I think the medial plica is an underappreciated diagnosis.
And let's talk about plica, because mm-hmm. I remember when I was going through school, and I think there are still some people that would debate it. Plica really exists in a structure that is intact.
Correct.
And once I cut that structure, the plica kind of magically disappears.
Correct.
Why? Why does that happen?
So, yeah, when the plica is an embryologic structure, it actually
is... using big words.
And it actually is a lot larger. It's not... It's present in many people, but not in all. But it's a lot larger in almost everyone once we're in the... embryologic stage and very young stage, and it recedes to a point where it sits just medial to the femur.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it can get thick and cause impingement, and I think not only does it have pain fibers, but it's also prone to scarring.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore removing it, trimming it, and receding it back to the medial gutter eliminates that source of impingement, and also treats some of those nerve endings as mm-hmm. well. And that's where I think a lot of the benefit comes from.
Okay.
So special tests that I use for that, I really like to have the patient engage and activate their extensor mechanism. Mm-hmm. I think if and this is an extension, if they have pain, they will impinge right at that medial plica.
Right.
And then
they're going to pinch it.
And I can even try to exacerbate that by two fingers, three fingers, just right along that medial condyle ridge.
Mm-hmm.
Just palpate along that area, have them go through a range of motion, have them relax their contraction. That sometimes causes a shift in the retinacular structures that will cause that patella to roll. They'll actually feel it roll
mm-hmm.
a lot of times, and they'll say, yeah, that's it. That's what it does. It kind of rolls like that, and it's sharp pain right there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that just keys me into their medial plica syndrome. Again, it's something maybe that I'm biased to because I have them in both my knees.
Right.
And I still, deal with them.
So do you give yourself like a local, and then you just start cutting on yourself, or
Well, that's
you've thought about
one,
it,
one,
you?
Of, one of the studies that I described was a guy cutting on himself without local.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, and it's even underappreciated in the radiology field. You know, I come across countless MRIs after I order them and review them, and plica sitting right there. Right between
and the radiologists, they're just not trained to pick
normal,
it up.
Normal knee.
Yeah, they're
normal knee. No abnormal findings. And I see a big old plica.
Right.
Just screaming for help.
And so I like to chunk information together.
Yeah.
And so if I look at the plica, what other type of structures around the body? Like to me, when you're saying plica, like platysma is kind of screaming at me a little bit.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah. What other structures in the body, you know, might we see, so we can say, okay, with the plica, it really has a tendency to act like this, and other structures in the body also act like this.
Oh, I think of impingement, so areas that can get impinged, so two harder areas between, or a softer area between a harder area, I think of femoral acetabular impingement.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of the mechanics or the kinematics of the hip joint. As the hip comes up into flexion,
mm-hmm.
And pinches soft tissue such as the labrum or the capsule between the femoral head and the acetabulum. That to me is a similar situation where you get two bony structures impinging on.
So when people are really learning about, femoral acetabular impingement, right, they should really kind of take that theory and say, plica is acting in a similar fashion.
Correct.
It's just not a true ball and socket joint. It's more of a hinge joint.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of the joint, it's really acting the
Correct.
Same way.
Correct.
Great. And so you've really focused on the medial knee. What other special tests do you use? You know, when you're, because right now, I mean, everything you're talking about is, boy, you know, for all the athletic trainers and physical therapists and, you know, that are listening, it's like, man, you know, your examination almost looks identical to what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about your anatomy and being thorough and having this algorithm you're going to stick to, and right? It's about
Absolutely.
The process.
Absolutely. And it's okay. about being thorough and complete, really.
Right.
That's what I would harp on. But additional things that I would use are ways to assess for contractures,
mm-hmm.
Imbalances. So I like to position the knee in extension or flexion, range
mm-hmm.
it. With the hip in different positions, maybe the hip in extension
mm-hmm.
versus the hip in flexion.
Mm-hmm.
I think the hip in flexion changes the forces across the knee. It tightens the hamstrings.
Sure.
And that usually results in a different sensation for patients when they range their knee.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that a lot of patients can get full extension if they're 45 degrees flexed.
But of if the I hip, put them, of the hip.
Of the hip, correct. Mm-hmm. If I get them up to 90 or more, though, they start feeling a lot more stress, not only in their hamstring, but in the kneecap.
Right.
So
because that hamstring is kind of pulling.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And all that, the capsule is going to pull with it.
Right.
And it's just tightening everything down.
And it's pulling on the tibia.
Mm-hmm.
So the knee and the extensor mechanism now has a stronger force to overcome.
Right.
Therefore, the pressure on the kneecap is just magnified.
And so
combat.
Nicole, I'm going to defer over to you. You know, when we talked about reliability and validity and specificity of orthopedic examinations, and we look at Lachman versus anterior drawer. Nicole, she just graduated from our Master of Athletic Training program at the University of Houston. And so we look at all that, right? Go Cougs. And so, you know, as we put that knee into flexion for an anterior drawer test, those hamstrings are really pulling on that tibia. We're not going to be able to get that anterior translation. But if we extend a little bit, slight flexion in that Lachman, boy, we can really get that thing to move.
Absolutely.
And I think that people that are listening, hopefully they understand that, you know, Jesus is evidence-based practice. Why do certain things happen?
Mm-hmm.
Statistically, you know, why are we looking at this? What are the numbers? What are my metrics? And hopefully everybody that's been listening over the last couple of days, they've really heard there's a lot of great information, but like I love watching the show The Prophet. You know, it's about business, small business. And Marcus Lemonis always tells the CEOs or the presidents, whoever owns it, you better know your numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Medicine is no different. You better know your numbers. You better know your statistics.
Absolutely. Evidence-based.
And so what is, what's your criteria now? So right, you and I are working together. I'm an athletic trainer, and I'm working with you. And, I say, okay, this is what I found, right? I've worked with you. I've used your protocol. Dr. Zude, What are some criteria of this is operable, this is non-operable? What are some indications and contraindications of why you're going to cut versus why you're not going to cut?
I think, again, this goes back to step one, understanding the anatomy, because that allows you to make an accurate diagnosis. That gives you something to go after with surgery. So that procedure that you do is not just an exploratory type of surgery and maybe a therapeutic type of surgery. You're actually going in there with a plan, a specific target, and a specific goal. And then the other things I look at are the whole picture, where the patient is at. Because, I don't necessarily advocate for just operating on the pathology as soon as it walks through your door. Yeah, they may have a huge medial plica, but that doesn't mean I need to go cut out that medial plica the next day. Mm-hmm. That means I need to fully work up any other sources of pain, see how conservative treatments work, because conservative treatments can work. Mm-hmm. So my threshold is after they've completed enough therapy and other conservative measures and still have symptoms that are limiting their return to play or their level of play. Because mm-hmm. sometimes you can get them well enough to where they're happy. And they may play with some level of pain in the anterior knee for the rest of their career, mm-hmm. but they may be able to perform at the level that they want to. And that's a success. Pat on the back, high fives, mm-hmm. even though they're not pain free, they're still getting to
their functional goals. Again, they're correct. Able to highly, they're highly functional,
correct,
in what they want to do,
correct.
So it's really going back and following this conservative treatment pattern.
Sure.
It's this communication between physician and athletic trainer, and if it's going to be a physical therapist, and where are they? Mm-hmm. You're constantly assessing, you're constantly communicating, you're constantly updating. And your decision, it sounds like, is based on, are they able to be functional? Mm-hmm. Does it affect their activities of daily living? Mm-hmm. What are their goals? So let's say you're a 25-year-old athlete versus maybe a 65-year-old athlete, right? If it's a 25-year-old athlete, well, God willing, you've got another 60 years ahead of you. If you're a 65-year-old athlete, well, maybe we don't need to run the marathon anymore.
Correct.
And we can kind of calm you down a little bit, and we don't need to cut on you.
Right. That's where it goes back to my point about where's the patient. Mm-hmm. Where are they in several different facets? Mm-hmm. You have to treat the whole patient. And I don't, necessarily just look at a number and start making decisions. I actually think their physiologic age is important, and that, you can't really just quantify with a number. You really got to kind of get a feel of the patient. I've had, 50-year-old, 60-year-old patients that are just as active as a 20-year-old and 30-year-old, so right. I treat them a little differently than the 60-year-old who's more like 70 or 80, mm-hmm. So that all takes into account,
mm-hmm. So. Yeah, what you're saying is really, it's pretty interesting. Yesterday we had on the show Dr. Kent,
yeah.
Michael Kent,
okay.
And he was talking about knee replacements, and so it's a lot of very similar type of, evaluations. It seems like everybody's kind of talking the same thing. We're really looking at, and the thing that impresses me about the whole group with Memorial Hermann is it's not this jump to cut, right? It's we're going to look at the patient, and if we have to bring into the operating room, we will, but hopefully we don't, and we'll see, right?
Right.
And as orthopedic surgeons, obviously, that's how you all, right?
That's how we function, and
yeah.
The good thing is that we have good options. It's not like our options don't yield results. The options are good. The treatment options are promising. They're evolving. We're getting better at it. Mm-hmm. We're getting better, and that's going to be the shift to the future is preventative care and non-operative ways to heal. So once we do, in cases where we do have injury, we're looking at different ways that we can heal as opposed to invasive surgery.
Did you hear what Dr. Zude said? The prevention of care and the athletic trainers' first practice domain is injury and illness prevention and wellness protection. And so for everybody that's listening, please, take note, take heed. Population health is upon us, and it's all about preventative care.
Absolutely.
And if we can prevent it from happening, we will increase our value. That spreads across multiple platforms, multiple domains. Dr. Zude, thank you, sir.
Oh, no problem.
For dropping knowledge.
No problem.
This is awesome. I know where I need to go if I have anterior knee pain. If I'm not mistaken, are you doing No, you're not doing one of the breakout sessions.
I am not, no.
You got to get back to clinic.
Yeah, or cases today, and then clinic for the rest of the week. So.
Okay. Thank you very much
for your
time.
No problem. Thanks, you guys, for having me.
All right. Appreciate it. Bye.